Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. It's a big week coming up for Scotland. 7 months since Scotland smashed Spain. Will Steve do the double and become King Esteban? Points mean prizes, but Scotland only need one. Commentator Rory Hamilton tells us how he prepares for the big game. And we wade through domestic matters from the Premiership down to League Two. Hola, Scottish football fans, and welcome to another nail-biting week involving the Scotland national team. By the end of this week, in fact, we could seal our place at Euro 2024 in Germany. Fingers crossed. I'm Andrew Slavin, here to hold the quivering hands of Tartan Army foot soldier and TNT senior producer Laura Brannan and Melbourne City head of creative Finlay Marks, who is looking more and more like Steve Clarke every international week.
What does that even mean?
It's just an attack on your follicle inferiority.
I would say that Steve Clarke's got more hair than I do. I shave mine right to the wid, as my granddad would say. Whereas he's got that old man, you know, I call it the motorway. It's like you've got the smooth middle bit and the grass verges growing at the side. Not quite a Svenger and Ericsson level, but, you know, it's going that way.
No, for sure. Sorry, Finn. One day I'll just give you like a proper professional intro, but I feel like you're an easy hit. Apologies. How are our nerves before we get stuck into like a bit of a busy weekend?
Nervous? Okay, nervous. No nerves here, mate. I'm absolutely buzzing because Scotland are going to Germany.
I know Laura's nerves are pretty good because we've just heard about her flight back from Scotland on the business class, mate. How was that?
What a life of luxury here, I know. I could get used to this, but I'm flying to Seville in 3 days' time and I definitely do not have business flights for that one.
So, the luxury of working for a big broadcaster, eh?
Yeah. But no, 3 days I fly to Spain. I am absolutely buzzing for it. I'm really looking forward to it. Hoping for a point going into this one. I'm a wee bit nervous. I'm a wee bit cautious going into this one. Really, really want to get it sealed up in the first game and not have to rely on those classic scenes of players sitting around couches watching a TV and celebrating a game when we're not even playing in it. So I don't want it to happen on Sunday. I want it to happen on Thursday night when we're actually playing.
For sure, exactly. But there's plenty of time. That's what we've bought ourselves right now. getting stuck into the funny straight away here, but if Angus Gunn, your favourite goalkeeper, Laura, does get injured before the game, it looks like we can count on not just Sander Clark or Liam Kelly, but Lyndon Dykes seems quite decent in between the sticks, eh?
Yeah, this is class. He got a whole, 8 minutes or something in goals. So there were QPR were playing Leeds in the league last week and the QPR goalie got sent off. They did their thing. And he got sent off in the 93rd minute, so it was 3 minutes into stoppage time. They were 1-0 down for most of the game anyway. But yeah, so Lyndon Dyke stepped up, took the honours, took the gloves, stepped into goal for a whole, stoppage time of 5, 6, 7 minutes or so, and did not concede a goal. So
still a clean sheet. Still
what can this man not do? He's an absolute hero everywhere on the pitch.
I think the really sad thing for Liam Kelly is that Lyndon Dykes is probably ahead of him now in terms of getting a goal in game for Scotland as well.
Poor Kells. He is never going to get his break.
True. Right, funnies, any more?
Did you see this, Andrew, the Martin Boyle jump scare?
Yeah, I saw it. It's freaky, man.
Some fans filming in the Hibs end from the Edinburgh Derby at the weekend, and when Hibs score,
it just turns out of nowhere. Oh, you fucker!
Martin Boyle is literally up at the camera, and it's just his massive face in this fan's camera. And it is literally one of these jump scares you get in horror movies when, you know, you close the bathroom cabinet and the guy's standing right behind your head. You're like, whoa, where did you come from? Because I was watching, I was like, it's funny, but I'm actually kind of creeped out every time it keeps playing on loop here. I don't like it.
One thing I really enjoyed before this weekend was Inverness, their official Twitter account, posting that they had been sent by Harry Gow Bakers a box of donuts for Duncan Ferguson. Kind of like just as like a kind of like a goodwill gesture type thing. And Duncan Ferguson's posted there were like a box of like 20 donuts. Now they're called Harry Gow's Baker's Dream Rings. And these guys, I mean, they're fucking donuts, all right? But there you go. But they're absolutely coated. Honestly, they are dripping in icing. Absolute class. They look great. But what I really like about it is just, I wonder if that food and Duncan Ferguson is going to like follow. I remember when he was at Forest Green Rovers, and we spoke about this last season in the podcast, I think, when he had to advertise vegan croissants because Forest Green are obviously a vegan football club and they're all kind of like they're owned by the eco warrior Dale Vince and stuff. But the way he describes that is amazing. I want him to start advertising more food products. It's so good.
Big Dumb Ferguson here for Forest Green. Look what I've got. I've got some lovely vegan croissants called La Ballongiere. I think that's how you pronounce it. And they're fantastic. And if you keep on eating one of these a day, you'll look like me in the end. I'm just going to try one of these lovely croissants. Yeah, they're very nice, in fact. Quite nice, then.
Have that for your breakfast?
I think I would, yeah. I think I'd take them home and actually have them for my tea tonight. A boulangerie is tasty, no matter how you say it. And believe me, it's very difficult to say it, but it's very tasty.
La boulangerie. The way he says it's great. I just love the way he talks.
I just love the contrast between the two places, you know, Forest Green Rovers and Inverness Cali Thistle, because you're right, it's like that one's like, you know, slightly gentrified kind of snack, you know, vegan croissants and stuff. And you go up to the Schneck and it's just like, fucking massive ice donuts, the dream rings, delicious.
Yeah.
It's absolute quality.
What is the deal with like football characters and holding things? Do you not remember Connor Salmon and the pizza?
Oh, that's the best one. Yes. Was that not because he got Man of the Match or something, though, from Pizza Express?
Was it Pizza Express, like, sponsored Party Thistle for a while? So their players had to hold the pizza box that was delivered at full time. But I think they lost the game. So he's just, like, an absolute raging holding this pizza box.
His face was tripping.
With the pizza on full display. It's just so classic a photo. Honestly, I remember there was also a time when Fraser Forster, when he was at Celtic, just held things. Every time like they did a photo call, he was just given things to hold up, whether it was like an advertising card or something. Just stop giving footballers things to hold. It just becomes a joke.
But that Connor Salmon thing, I mean, nobody likes fish on a pizza anyway. So there you go.
Can't be having that, mate. You better get your finger out, all right, and make sure that you get the results.
Newsy things. The boring things is news, or is it? Where do we start here? I think we start with the really exciting stuff. With Cinch is ending its sponsorship a year early with Scottish football. Well done, Neil Doncaster. We feel loved.
It's so meta because it's like it's so Cinch that Cinch are pulling out of their own sponsorship deal a year early. So it that'll mean a loss of, well, it'll mean no sponsor to start with because there's nobody in place to take it over, and $1.5 million that won't go to any of the league clubs. But I think it's you know, it's funny, we can have a go and stuff at the SPFL. I think there was actually a really interesting tweet that SPFL Media Watch put out, where they kind of delved into it a little. I would encourage people, if you don't follow that account, it's brilliant. It's really good. It covers so much around the sport on a daily basis. But you know, they were talking about, well, what happens from here? And it's a really difficult market, even if we were good and competent at trying to market ourselves, which we're not, I don't think. It's a really difficult market for any sport to try and find sponsorship in. So it's not great news on the face of it, but there could be longer term implications. And you know how long it's taken to find sponsors for the domestic cups as well. I feel a bit nervous about where this could leave us in terms of sponsorship of the league.
Where's Tunnocks when you need them? Bring them back.
It's just a bit depressing to think that they had a 5-year contract, they had a get out clause after 3 years, and they're executing it. It's just a bit, this, I mean, you can almost see it coming. And at a time when we're complaining last week that there was no TV coverage of any games, we're complaining this week because the Edinburgh Derby was completely blacked out.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking, you're looking ahead to 2029 and you're thinking it's so far away. The state of our game over the next few years, who's going to rescue us? Who's going to actually shake it up here?
Nah, come on, shake it up. Who could sponsor the Scottish Premiership or the SPFL? Who could do it? Dream Rings?
Dream Rings.
Harry Gow, SPFL?
The Dream Ring Premiership sounds incredible. I mean, that sounds like something from Lord of the Rings or something like that.
I was going to say, it sounds like something like Mario Kart or something.
Yeah, I think there's loads of possibilities. Stay positive about this.
Well, I think to bring it back around to a serious part of the conversation, I think there's good value, I think, for businesses and organisations if they want to enter a sponsorship deal. That, again, in this post by SPFL Media Watch, they were talking about how the banking sector could be a good option. Something like Chase, in particular, could be a good fit because they have no active sports sponsorship. And it's a really good way for up-and-coming organisations and brands to get their profile raised, which I think would happen with Cinch. Like, who knew what Cinch was really before they took on sponsorship of the SPFL? And now everybody knows, and Ryland's like this kind of like amazing figure in Scottish football now for the last couple of years. I think one of the positive things is that there's also that Scottish football marketing now exists and it's in place to try and facilitate the sponsorship deal with a commercial director in place. So I think that should mean that there's a person in-house whose job it is solely is to chase this stuff rather than punting it out to agencies. Or I think with the Cinch deal, you know, it's kind of like jobs for the boys. I think like there were people involved with Cinch who go way back to the people at the top of the SPFL, and it was like quite a cushy thing for both parties to get involved without it necessarily being the best value for the main stakeholders, which are the clubs. And I just hope that given this time, it could be a bit of a blessing in disguise where we're not locked into it for 5 years. It was an all right deal. It wasn't amazing. It was signed during COVID, which kept the clubs going. But I think.
And it also caused a lot of controversy with Rangers as well, didn't it? So that wasn't exactly a great kind of thing for Cinch and for the SPFL, and there was a lot of fallout with that afterwards as well.
There was, but that was entirely on the SPFL, basically contradicting their own, and not just their own, but the statutes of any business sponsorship, which was all on them, which ended up costing them, was it about £1 million? So that's almost a whole year's sponsorship from Cinch anyway. Just an absolute joke. So you hope going forward with the right people in place internally and with the opportunity now post-COVID to look at an increased deal. Because I think when you think about it as well, we have sellout crowds continually now, still continually high viewing figures despite none of it ever going out on TV. There's a really good return on investment here, and you see how much the fans bought into the Cinch Premiership or the Cinch League One or League Two, whatever. It's like people refer to it as the Cinch. You kind of can't buy that stuff. I mean, you literally can, and hopefully they do. But that's what we're wanting to get to. It is a good product, and there's something brilliant that if the right partner is found, it can be a really brilliant ROI for a lot of businesses.
Laura, you kicked up a good bit of positivity around Scottish football last week because of your travels with TNT up to do the Aberdeen game. I know you did the Newcastle game before that, but you were buzzing to get up the road to cover Scottish football again. And the piece that you put out on Aberdeen's night, first European night in 15 years or 12 years or something like that?
16 years, yeah. First group stage years. Game at Pittodrie, 16
really?
Years.
Really, really good. And it was a great piece, mate. I have to say, really nice to see the response as well you got. Like, how was it putting it all together? And talk to us about it from start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, just in general, like you're talking about talking up Scottish football and stuff. And this week has just shown to me just how hungry the fans are in Scotland. No matter what club you support, we are just hungry for somebody to tell our stories. There's so many good stories across Scottish football. It came about. I was obviously TNT. I've been in there for about a month now. We have the rights to the European games. So naturally, I am like, right, okay, any sort of Celtic, Rangers or Aberdeen coverage, I'm like, hand up straight away. Mm-hmm, pick me. I want to go and cover that. And the opportunity came up. And it was very much like the team, the digital team, they are very much still finding their feet since the crossover from BT Sport. So it's a bit of, let's try some things, let's see what sticks, what doesn't, let's have a bit of fun as well and experiment. So I was like, right, fine, send me up there. I was quite confident of being able to talk to people, put something together. I didn't quite know at that stage what I was going to put together, and it all just sort of nicely fell into place. Spoke to a range of people just about how exciting the occasion was. So yeah, first home group stage match in 16 years. Obviously the result wasn't the best. They were obviously going for the win. They very much was probably the most winnable game of the group out of the six games, so it was a wee bit disappointing, but I still wanted to just produce a piece that showed the overall magnitude of the occasion and the excitement that surrounded it. And that was including by speaking to Alan Burrows, the chief exec, speaking to the guys who set up the Tifo display, speaking to a supporter, and we got one of the players as well. And all of them just sort of encapsulated that excitement and occasion. And yeah, it came together quite nicely in the end. It was a very long night putting the edit together, but I was... like, that's the sort of thing I absolutely buzz off of, right from being back in Scotland again, covering football. Obviously, it's been the first time in about just under a year and a half now since I left Motherwell.
And it was just you as well. There was no support.
Nope, just me and my own.
That's tough, man.
Yeah, just sort of winging it and making it up as I go along, basically, with a kind of half plan in my head. And
with structure and producing skills.
but then in a way that sort of makes it easier when you're on your own, because you don't have a set plan and you are sort of winging it on the ground. It does make it slightly easier when you are on your own and you can just adapt to your own plans and times and meshes you're getting in, and everything changes obviously at the last minute. But the feedback I got was actually really quite surprising, quite overwhelming, because I put it out, obviously we put it out on Friday night, and the reaction was just like, everyone was just like, this is great, this looks so good. And I since went to the St Mirren Rangers game, and I had some of the reporters and the journalists come up to me and say the same. They were like, it wasn't just Aberdeen fans, it was people in the industry and supporters of other clubs saying on Twitter and in real life in person, just saying like, yeah, we don't have anything like that, and we don't, and that's what frustrates me so much. Because in an ideal world, I'd love to, you know, run the SPFL and do these stories for all clubs, all 42 of our clubs, because everyone, no matter if you're Celtic or you're Brechin or you're Arbroath, whatever end of the country, right, you've all got stories to tell. And whether it's a league game or a European game or a cup game, whatever, or if it's just one individual player or a manager's story, our game is so good. And coming back up here again for a couple of days, normally when I go back home it's for Scotland games, but to go back home during league games, it was actually really nice, and it brought that kind of fire back to my belly again, because I was like, right, this is where my passion is. And look, it's great, I absolutely love, and I'm not getting like carried away here, I absolutely love the fact I'm getting to cover, like, I've covered Arsenal and Brighton and Newcastle in their European games, fantastic experience. But it's when I get to go home and cover our teams, I'm like, yeah,
means more.
The heart and soul is here, and I hope that comes across in my work as well, and the fans see that I'm telling these stories. I just want more of it. I just want somebody out there to be doing it.
You can only do one game at a time, pal.
I can't do it myself, so just want more people to do it, because we all want it. Like, I want it the same way. I want to be able to watch it the same way everyone else does.
There's definitely the appetite for it. It's just the resource for it, and good on TNT for sending people like yourselves out to do it. And having the freedom to be able to do it as well. It's really important. I know those guys really well, Laura, and the fact that they're pushing you and allowing you to do that stuff is absolutely class.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should say this podcast has no sponsors. We do this all off our own backs.
How about Cinch? Cinch are looking for some business right now.
Yeah, maybe this can be the Cinch Scottish Football Show. Maybe that's enough for them. but if you do enjoy listening to our dulcet tones, you can also see us on YouTube and Twitter and Instagram. That's so lame, Laura. Lame little wave. But your support keeps us going as well. So definitely plug us. And also, our last chat with Derek Ray and Rory Hamilton was so good. The full interviews of both of those are on YouTube, so you can catch that. It's excellent. if I don't say so myself.
It's about an hour long as well, so it's they discuss a lot of things that...
Oh, scrap it then.
...left on the cutting room floor for the episodes. Yeah. I think it's about 52 minutes or something like that, but it's well worth checking out.
All right, keep going.
Yeah, it's good. And also as well, the full interview we did with Stephen Robinson, the St Mary manager's up there as well, which is just... we're so fortunate to be in a position in the industry where we do have these contacts and we do know these people, and they speak quite openly and freely about their jobs, which a lot of them are fans first and foremost, as well as being professionals within a sport, whether that's in a management capacity, whether it's in fan media even, or you know, whether they're some of the most celebrated commentators we've got in the game. So yeah, well worth checking out if you've not watched any of the YouTube content that we've got. It's really good because it's not really us talking, it's our guests.
Yeah, that's the best bit. Viva España. It's so good. Right, Scotland fans heading to Spain this week will be delighted for the sunshine, leaving behind the soggy, waterlogged streets of Scotland after the weekend at the Fad Gizo. A single point is all we need to get over the line and into Euro 2024 and to those beers in Germany. Kickoff in Seville, though, takes place on Thursday at 7:45 before a friendly against France in Lille 5 days later, when we could be partying big time. But Laura, what's the state of play here? Obviously, we know we just need a point, but is there anything else that could happen in the week?
Yeah, so the night that we obviously play Spain, Norway are playing Cyprus. So even if we lose to Spain, we have a second chance. It's very slim chance, but if Cyprus beat Norway, then it Bollocks. Rules them out of the running. It's not going to happen, let's face it.
Gonna happen.
No, I mean, if Georgia couldn't get that last minute equaliser a few weeks ago, it's not going to happen. Nah. The next chance we have is actually on the Sunday. And annoyingly, we don't play that day. So because it's an uneven number of teams in the group, we've obviously got our bye in this window. So that's why we're playing France in a friendly next week. Mm-hmm. The other teams play on Sunday in our group. So annoyingly, the players will all be sitting around the hotel. The fans will just be, you know, kind of like COVID time, sitting in their house, just checking the other scores. So I kind of don't want this to happen. But if Norway don't beat Spain, then that rules them out and in turn clinches us qualification. So mm-hmm. essentially, we are waiting on Norway messing up here, yeah. whether it's against Cyprus or against Spain. Or we just do it ourselves against Spain. I don't know about you guys. I don't want to do it when we're not playing. We've got our friendly against France 2 days later, which we can have a party at, but it's just not quite the same for me. I want to do it when we're actually on the pitch.
I'm going to echo Steve Clark here and say that the goal was not to like finish top of the group. The goal is to qualify. So qualifying by any means is the best thing ever. Like, I don't care how we do it.
You want to do it similar to your TV?
I want to do it. I have preferences, don't get me wrong. But as long as we do it, that is the only thing that matters.
I think I'm slightly scarred by COVID and the Serbia game because we all made the best of it and we all enjoyed it because it was such an emotion we'd never felt before. Well, I hadn't felt before personally, and many my age probably hadn't. But I want to at least be there, or if I'm not there, and I know fans, not all fans will be obviously in Spain, but I want them to at least be in their normal environment, whether that is in the pub with their friends or home watching it with their families or whatever, just not on a Sunday night checking live score and seeing that no notifications are coming through. It's just not the same. But they, look, I'm getting greedy now. I'm absolutely getting greedy and I just want to get there, obviously. So yeah, I'm not going to get carried away. You're right. I need to concede that any way is the best way.
I just wanted to come back to something that you were saying just there, Andrew, about like, you know, the goal was qualification, and of course you're right. But I think it's like sometimes things change during the course of qualifying or a campaign that it does change the expectations. I think because it was such a breathtaking start by Scotland, literally history making from a Scottish point of view, mm-hmm. in how well we've started, you want to keep going with that. You want to keep the momentum going, and you want to qualify top now. I think that, you know, the goals can change. The ultimate goal is still qualifying, and that's all but assured. I think it will happen, you know, this international break. But I think then, just because you've ticked that box doesn't mean that you can't push yourself to keep going on, because there are benefits to finishing top. The further up we qualify, the better our seeding and the better our draw, the better the likelihood of hopefully for the first time ever getting out the group stages, which would be, you know, an unparalleled dream for Scotland fans. Nobody's ever seen it in their lifetimes. It would be incredible. So I agree with you, like it is the core thing, but I think we're at a stage now where it's not wishful thinking. Like, I think this is where you want to start to get to be, kind of in the same way that, you know, England going into qualifying groups will be like, all right, okay, so when we qualify, blah blah blah, you know, we'll take these boxes and do stuff. That's where we want to get to, not just praying and hoping, wishing against wish that this time will be our time. It's like, nah, it's every time now, but just how well are we going to do it? We're going to get there. We got Spain, fine. Well, let's just see if we can finish top, and we've given ourselves the best possible platform to do that. So I'm really not just excited, expectant. I expect now a lot from the Scotland team, and I think that's a great place to be.
That's a great place to be, but we have been burned before. But look, there's been a lot of good omens this week, especially in European football, at these shores as well. But like said, John McGinn scoring a last minute winner against was it the Serbians, Zrinjski Mostar, which was a 1-0 win for them in the Europa League, and then amazing story, Scott McTominay coming off the bench for Man United at like 87 minutes, then scoring a goal that was disallowed in 90 minutes, then scoring the equaliser in 93 minutes, and then a winner 4 minutes later. Like, absolute pandemonium against Brentford. Like, just that, I don't think I've ever seen an impact like that. Maybe I have, but yeah, just insane. I just hope that we haven't, you know, blown our load too early.
They're just getting warmed up.
And even you look at Lewis Bergson as well. So he was captain in Bologna at the weekend. Aye. They were 2-0 down to Inter Milan. He won the penalty. Yeah, he won the penalty that brought it back to 2-1. And then he set up the equaliser as well. So, I mean, that's three big moments that our players... Okay, Lewis Riggs might not start the game, but you're looking at John McGinn, Scott McTominay. They're massive moments. I was holding out hoping that maybe Andy Robertson would score the last-minute winner for Liverpool today, just for a little omen that our three biggest names were doing it. But maybe Andy Robertson's saving himself for Thursday night, you know. I would take that. Like, a 94th-minute winner like that would just be incredible. Or equaliser.
Scotland are facing a very different Spain right now, though, than who we faced 7 months ago. This is, you know, this team have now won the Nations League competition. Was it against the Netherlands?
Croatia.
Against Croatia. So, I mean, Croatia, who were pretty much like, what, semi-finalists of the World Cup?
Yeah, they've also scored 13 goals in two games and conceded one. Okay, they're playing Cyprus and Georgia, which aren't the toughest opposition, I grant you that. But they've
found
their
feet. But
they're
just better prepared now.
Yeah, they've got into their stride. It's a bit like kind of England always kind of do this, don't they? They start a wee bit rusty in competitions and then they start to kind of find their feet. It feels like Spain's done that now. And when they're on their own territory as well, I feel like this is going to be a whole different ballgame to what we saw in March.
I think also as well, it's worth pointing out the venue. So Spain don't have a national stadium. They move their games around the country. And this is something that's historically been the case for decades now. Their most difficult game in qualifying, they always put in Seville because it's one of the most hostile atmospheres, one of the best atmospheres, and it's always been that way. So yeah, it's kind of a mark of respect that's the one they picked out from our qualifying. It wasn't Norway and Holland.
I bloody hate it though. There's like a running track around the running track. It's my seat's not going to be on the moon. Yeah, but there's going to be a good following though. I think there's about 4,000 Scotland tickets I think we got in the end, and then there's also a good batch that have like spot up for the home section as well, nearest to the away end. So I think there's going to be a really strong following from Scotland fans.
There's also the negative aspect of not having Kieran Tierney in this match as well, and it's led to a lot of people kind of suggesting, will Steve Clarke change the way he sets up, because we've been a very kind of rigid team for quite a while, which has worked for us excellently, but will he change his tactics? Do you think we'll see something different? I don't think we'll see the likes of Scott McTominay playing centre-half again. Surely no. We can't be seeing anything like that. But I wonder if even, like, you know, we do have flexibility in the likes of Aaron Hickey could potentially play on the other side to kind of back up Robertson. I know he's played that role before. He hasn't in a long time. But do you have any kind of trepidation towards Steve's potential tactics in this?
The most predictable way I see him doing this is putting Porteous on the right, Hendry in the middle, and bringing in Liam Cooper. Now, Cooper has been coming back from an injury and hasn't played too much for Leeds recently. So that makes me a little bit nervous, but he's also the one that he relied on to replace Tierney the last time he played Spain when Tierney was taken off. And I'm just kind of looking at the options. The options basically are John Souter, Scott McKenna, or Liam Cooper, and it's how you fit them in.
The biggest thing for me is the issue of pace. It's not always something that you need. I think it does help, especially when, you know, Spain don't really tend to play with like out and out forwards, but they've got very quick players, and especially coming in from the channels. So it's the pace that worries me, which is why Cooper might not necessarily be the best option for that.
Or Scott McKenna or John Souter.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of pace and form, John Souter I don't think would be the best one. Of those three, I would actually say Scott McKenna is probably the best. I know historically he's not been the best necessarily for Scotland, but I think he's really grown as a player in the last 2 years of the Premier League playing for Nottingham Forest. But then it's Steve Clarke, so I think he'll probably go with Liam Cooper, because it's like, if he's done it once and it's worked vaguely before, he'll do it again. But I do think we've got options, and it's how we combat it in that pace versus reading the game, and also giving us an attacking outlet as well. Defensively it's interesting, and we'll definitely miss Tierney.
That's one word for it.
But I have faith in the squad that's there. I do, and I think when you see the stature that other players previously, so Porteous is a good example, where you're just a bit like, boy, he's a bit of a liability, oh, he dives in, you know, this, that, and the other. He's really grown in stature. Whilst he's laterally at Hibs, and obviously at Watford, he's grown all the time, but in his last number of international games, he's been excellent. So I think you trust in the squad, and you trust in the team mentality, that no matter what 11 men are taking the field to start with, or who's coming in halfway through the game, you trust them to do the job, and you trust in Clarke to do the best that we can there. It's a hell of a place to go, and it'll be a backs to the wall performance, I think, but you just never know with a Scotland team.
Even from a personal perspective, I feel quite sorry for Kieran Tierney, because he's played such a huge part in this campaign so far.
Yeah.
And if he is ruled out of the remainder of the year, it's even just like, he's not going to be involved in the celebrations. This is a guy who led the charge into the dressing room after we beat Serbia, and that kind of infamous, it's a gif now, and it led to the whole kind of I can boogie and all this stuff, and all the videos that we saw from the dressing room. He's a major part in the squad. He's a major, like, as a person and a player. And just to see somebody so major like that miss out, I just kind of feel a bit sorry for him, just on a human perspective. It's a bit of a shame.
I think the rumour is that he should be back for the new year, but I know it's still up in air yet. But you're right that he is not just a pivotal player on the pitch. Like, he's very, very important as a character. And like, he kind of does play a kind of captain's role, which is weird, because we've always had this left-back kind of thing with Andy Robertson, then Tierney, even Hickey to an extent as well. I do wonder, though, looking ahead to the game against France, is there anyone you would like to see kind of get a run out, and we could see how good they could be? I think Lewis Ferguson's the standout for a start.
Yeah.
And maybe Nathan Patterson as well. But what's your thoughts, Finn?
Lewis Ferguson for me is the obvious one. I would like to see the point of the friendlies to me, and it's something I, not that we've had much cause to criticize Steve Clarke, but there are still certain things that kind of annoy me sometimes. And the friendlies should be the experiments; they should be the free hits to try out different players. And I remember it was before Craig Gordon got his leg break, and I can't remember who the friendly was against, but we were playing a friendly.
The Turkey.
And that's who it was, yeah. And I was just like, it made no sense to play a goalkeeper the wrong side of 40 who's great and amazing, but we know what he does. Why on earth wouldn't you give at least 45 minutes to one of the other goalkeepers, whether it was Xander Clarke or Liam Kelly at the time, or both? You know, I want to see his experiment with systems and players, and just give minutes to these guys as well. You never know. So we've barely seen, you know, Jacob Brown in a Scotland shirt. Mm-hmm. Give him minutes, see what can happen. Maybe start Kevin Nisbet rather than London Dykes, you know, like that kind of thing. Try and keep things fresh within the squad and keep players hungry, because I think there is a notion that's worked really well for Clarke, which is that he knows his boys and he sticks with his boys. And actually that's borne such fruit for us, because he's stuck with players and we've got a system and it's fairly rigid. But the flip side of that is, what's the incentive for other boys on the outside? It's just like, well, unless somebody in your position gets injured, you're not going to get in the team. And I don't think that's the way it should be. I think it should be a shop window to Steve Clarke for these players that are on the fringes to get a shout, get at least 45 minutes and be like, go out there and impress me, give everything. I know it's against France, it's against one of the best teams in the world, but go out there and give it everything. And even if you know we concede 3 goals, it doesn't matter, it's a friendly. That is the point of it. I'd rather try things in these games, and it didn't work, great, okay, well, we know what the formation is and what the team is going to be once we get back to the real stuff in the competitive fixtures. So that would be my plea to Steve Clarke, is just let's get a few more fresh faces into the team, try out a couple of different things and see where that takes us.
Okay, you loved our chat with Rory Hamilton and Derek Ray last week. We loved our chat with them too. So we've got some more for you. With Rory being the lead commentator on Scotland games for rights holders Viaplay, we had to ask him if he's ready for that historic qualification line and what tips Derek can give us for the party in Germany next summer.
Can I just steer us towards more kind of the run that Scotland are on at the moment? If we talk about the international setup, and you know, Steve Clarke's a very good manager, it's a bit of a catchphrase of mine on this podcast. It was in the olden days as well. But Rory, you've had the joy of commentating on Scotland games, and Derek, I know you have in the past too. How much are you enjoying this run, and what is different about this Scotland team that maybe you think hasn't been in previous Scotland squads? I'll go to you, Rory, first, because you're currently following the team.
I mean, I think it stems from the manager, who very much put up that sort of mentality at Kilmarnock. They completely raised their game, particularly with Celtic and Rangers. Brendan Rodgers struggled with Rugby Park, Steven Gerrard. I mean, that was another... I think I did twice back-to-back years, and Rangers came back from the January break and lost at Rugby Park, and it was like a graveyard of their title hopes. They seemed to just falter, and Steve Clarke thrived taking on, like Aberdeen in the 80s, if you could take on obviously not to dominate, it's virtually impossible now, but to be able to beat them and not just on a one-off. And I think that he's got that mentality, a club mentality, into the national side. But I think the main thing, and I've been banging on about this for years, my most, and I'll refuse to be in the room if it's being brought up, I hate glorious failure. It's just failure. There's nothing glorious about it. Eventually, only one team can win a tournament. I can imagine if Scotland got to a final and lost, people would talk about that as glorious failure. I mean, it's complete rubbish. I think this team have taken that away from their psyche, and we as a nation probably need to get rid of it from our psyche, but this group of players, I think, have put that completely to the backs of their minds. They don't believe that this is all just going to, no matter how well it's going now, it's all just going to eventually end up in a failure. And I think that that probably has taken a lot of work, because you look at squads that we've had in the past, very good players playing for big clubs that have won huge tournaments, and it seemed that there was always something in the back of the minds. And with the supporters, I think the supporters are starting to come round to that, that there's a belief, that there's a trust that they can go out and get results when they need to.
Definitely.
What I would say about Scotland is that, and this is going back a few years, I remember being on a panel discussion program at ESPN with a lot of, you know, old-time internationals, none of them from Scotland. But I remember I was the lone voice arguing for the changes that UEFA were making at that particular time to enlarge the Euros. And the sort of the elitist view was, well, no, we don't want little teams involved. We want, you know, the best teams should be rewarded. And I made the point that all you're doing with that is you're enriching the already rich. You know, so you're saying to FAs who already have a lot of money, oh yeah, we'll give you more money because you'll keep on qualifying and you'll have haves and you'll have have-nots. And Scotland were very much the have-nots. What I'm really saying is a long-winded way of saying, I think that the changes to enlarge the Euros and to have the Nations League have really positively impacted Scotland. You know, I think it's given countries like Scotland, who were very much on the outside looking in for an entire generation. You know, you think back to the last time Scotland had been at a major tournament until the last Euros. You know, ridiculous, really. You know, and for somebody, you know, I'm in my 50s, I grew up with Scotland qualifying for every World Cup. You know, it wasn't unusual. It was the norm. It happened. Now, getting out of the group, that was a challenge. That's always been a challenge. But Scotland were always there. So I think we should actually applaud, and we should always, as Scots, be defenders of the fact that more teams get to tournaments, because it was steadily going nowhere. You had the same teams virtually qualifying for every Euro. A country like Scotland just couldn't get in, but now you have more opportunities. And we saw that last time. Hopefully Scotland learned from the experience last time. I didn't think they played badly at the last Euro. I thought they were unlucky against the Czech Republic, did well against England, and then Croatia were just a bit too much. But I think this time, as Rory said, Steve Clark deserves tremendous credit, because sometimes with a national team, I think being a national team manager, it's the ultimate job for a football pragmatist. It's not really a job for an idealist who wants to come in and impose a particular style. It's a job for somebody who's very good at saying, here's who I've got, here are the players who I have, I've got to make them into a team, can't be too fussy about it, we've got to play to our strengths and try to eliminate our weaknesses. And Steve Clarke has done that, and his personality suits this group of players. And yeah, Scotland are not the best team in Europe, nowhere close, but they are punching above their weight, and my goodness, we have not said that for a generation, and it's nice to be able to say that. And and I hope Rory and I are at Scotland games together, because I'll be there working for US TV on the Euros, and I don't know if I'll be covering Scotland, but I very much hope so.
I just wondered if that argument that you presented to UEFA, Derek, if you could do the same for the Champions League as well.
Well, that's right. Yeah. That'd be good. No, 100%. Exactly. I mean, a huge believer on that. That I think that. And it's amazing just how ordinary people sometimes talk about, oh, well, you know, teams have to deserve it and they have to be there on merit. But they're not looking at the silly financial situation in football nowadays, where the rich just get richer and richer and richer. And every so often we have to do a lot, I think, in football to level that playing field financially.
Just that's a big question that always comes in a lot of Scottish football fans' minds, especially on Twitter and the other social media, is kind of enlarging the domestic league as well. Do you think that's different, or do you think that kind of follows the same sort of thought pattern? Do you think the top flight should be? I know we're going away from Scotland here, but just your thinking there, it kind of adds to the element of maybe the top flight should be extended to like a 16-team league, or is that different, do you think?
No, I think there's some logic to that as well. Although, see, a lot of people in Scotland always point to the fact that what they might see as the golden era, and that golden era, you could argue, was the 80s, when you had four really, you know, top sides. You had Aberdeen and Dundee United, who arguably in the 80s were better than Rangers and at least as good as Celtic. And you had real competition at the top end of the table. And that came on the back of the creation of the top 10. And, you know, back then it seemed that was the way forward. But I sort of understand the argument that, yeah, you could make it bigger. What I would say is, if you're going to do that, you really do have to try to, this is again just a personal opinion, not everyone will agree with it, you've got to stop financially giving money to the same clubs year in, year out. You have to have some solidarity within the league if you do actually want competition, and that is the goal. So, you know, if Celtic are going to be winning the title more often than not, and Rangers are going to be second more often than not, and maybe once every so often Rangers will win the title, as has happened recently, you've got to try to cut back the whole sort of, well, we'll just keep giving them money. And what do you think is going to change if you keep giving the already rich more money? You know, trickle-down economics, I'm not a great fan of that in everyday, without getting into politics, I'm not a great fan of trickle-down economics in everyday life. I don't think it works for the average person. And by the same token, in my opinion, it doesn't work in football either, if you want teams who are at the lower end to be able to pick themselves up.
It's the same argument as well for the Champions League, isn't it? That if Celtic and Rangers would be the ones to make that argument, because they're the most likely to be gaining access or trying to gain access to the Champions League, then yeah, there needs to be an understanding that that is the same situation that happens in Scottish football. And the other thing that I know that broadcasters love, the Old Firm, Celtic Rangers, whatever you want to call it, and they want as much of that as they can possibly get. I think that four league games is almost too much in a season, given that particularly at the moment they're tending to meet in both cups, because there's not much else that can beat them. You will get a one-off every now and again, like Kilmarnock this season, but they're tending to knock each other out. So you're getting six games a season. We have a fantastic fixture that should be shown all around the world, but maybe to do it six times a season might dilute it a little bit. So I would be softly in favour of a bigger league. I think fans would be more engaged that you get one trip to a ground that season rather than going up twice. I think also the teams in the Championship are not significantly weaker than those at the bottom of the Premiership. I mean, we saw that with Partick Thistle at the end of last season against Ross County. They were really unlucky. But there's a collection of teams at that level which I don't think they would weaken the league at all.
I'm going to pull this back, Andrew, in a very dark, heavy turn there. When I was enjoying the chat of the Euros there.
sorry, Laura.
And I'm more so just to kind of round it up as well, but I just kind of want to look ahead and allow me to dream, because I can't tell myself yet we're quite over the line. Until it's officially done. Yeah, until it's officially over the line, I'm not going to say those words. But yeah, if we do get to Germany, I feel like Derek would be wasting an opportunity to ask the perfect person for what can we expect here? Because as a fan, I see this as the perfect tournament. It is in one country. It is one that is the perfect size in terms of transport, moving around. They've nailed football culture in general already as it is. What can we really expect if we go to Germany, and where should the fans be looking to go? Because obviously right now we don't know yet where the games are going to be. And can I sleep on your couch? Because I think hotels might be hard to come by.
There's a queue.
Yeah, you're not the first to have made that request.
How many couches do you own?
I'm rapidly trying to obtain five or six couches. But no, Laura, it's a great question. And what I would say is that it is the perfect country. It's the ideal country for Scotland. I mean, if you think about the last Euro, you know, it wasn't a real situation because of where we were on the pandemic at that time. And, you know, I don't think UEFA will ever do that again with multi-city tournaments like that. You're in a country that is a real football country. What's interesting is that there's sort of a crisis of confidence with the German national team at the moment. New coach in Julian Nagelsmann, perhaps things will improve. But most of my German friends talk about how much they're looking forward to fans from other countries coming in. And I've told them, and I don't know what everybody thinks, I have a feeling that we may have, not all at once, I wouldn't be surprised if we have between 75,000 and 100,000 Scots in Germany should Scotland qualify. You know, over the course of the tournament. And again, in answer to your question, I say that because it's so easy to get there, relatively speaking. You don't actually even have to go to Germany to base yourself. You could decide to do it in Belgium or the Netherlands or Poland or Austria or Switzerland and make, you know, journeys in there. But Germany is a great place, especially in the summer. There's a nighttime culture there that's wonderful. It's an outdoors culture, very much in the evenings. And, you know, it's all about beer, but as part of a sort of a civil way of looking at life, you know, not beer just to consume it and consume it and consume it. Sometimes in Scotland,
like that was the first point you brought up. I love that, Derek.
But what's great is that every region has its own, is very proud of its own beer brewing customs, and that's part of life. You know, like wine is in France, you know, beer very much in most parts of Germany, some wine regions in Germany as well. But city centres that are just a joy to be in. And one of the great things about this tournament also is that it's going to be a train experience in terms of getting around. And Deutsche Bahn is criticised within Germany for not quite having the meticulous reputation that people who are not from Germany think it has. It's not always on time. There are sometimes delays and cancellations. It's not, I would say it's not as bad as ScotRail. Having been on ScotRail quite recently, it's not as bad as ScotRail. But it is it's not always perfect, but it will get you around. And also with all the regional trains and trams and buses. And so what I'm really saying is it's very easy. For example, if you were to base yourself in Frankfurt, right in the middle of the country, you have easy access to about 5-6 venues, you know, an hour or two by train. And that's what I've said to most Scottish fans who have asked, where should we base ourselves? I've said, just choose a base and then go on the train, you know. And if you do choose, you know, places like my hub away from home is Cologne. And again, that is, you know, Frankfurt's an hour by train, Dortmund's an hour by train, Gelsenkirchen's an hour by train, Düsseldorf's half an hour by train. You can't go wrong in a place like Cologne. But also look at some of the non-venue cities. You know, Bochum is a great city for a party and with its culture. And, you know, that's just right there in the Ruhrpott, the industrial region beside Dortmund and Gelsenkirchen. And again, we don't know where Scotland will be playing. You know, some teams will be playing up in the north in Hamburg, or in the east in Leipzig or Berlin. Some will be in the south in Munich or Stuttgart. But the great thing about the country is you can pop on a train in the morning and you can be in the city you need to be in most cases by the afternoon. You know, if you were to go Munich, Hamburg, that takes a lot longer. You know, that takes 7 hours or so. But it's easy to get around. And so I wouldn't sweat that too much. I would just pick a place where you want to be, assuming if Scotland make it, Laura, which I think we think is going to happen. Just choose a place. And as I say, you know, somewhere like Mainz, somewhere like Bochum, which are not venue cities, have a look at them as well. And you're in for a treat.
I went out to Germany in the 2006 World Cup, which, I mean, it feels ridiculous to say that. It's almost 20 years ago. We went out in my beaten-up old Fiesta that had about 120,000 miles on the clock, three of us in the car.
Oh, my goodness.
That's amazing.
We toured around for, like, 3 weeks. We left it in Munich and went to Prague for a couple of days. Came back and it had been lifted and put in some like pounds. I mean, it was just ridiculous. Then driving up, because we got an email that had ended up in my junk folder in my Hotmail account or something. Only spotted it by chance while we were in Prague. Noticed that we'd actually got an email from FIFA saying, "Yeah, you were successful in the ballot for the tickets to Germany, Argentina." That was so. We were in Prague.
Oh my goodness!
The car's in a park out by the airport that we didn't know it was there in Munich, and the game's in Berlin, and we had about 24 hours pretty much to do it, and we just made it, no sleep.
Wow.
But to back up everything that Derek has said, Germany is by an absolute mile the country in the world that is best set up to host a major tournament, and that's... I said that in 2006. Obviously, times have moved on, but having been there with Scotland and Dortmund, when you also got included in your match ticket, I think it was about €20 to watch Germany, who had just become world champions. You got your train fare included in your match ticket, and when you got into the ground, you got a beer and a Frankfurter. You know, it was all included. Like, they treat their supporters so, so well. And then having done it with work, it's been fantastic. I was just in Frankfurt 2 weeks ago with Aberdeen, that's an atmosphere like I've never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
All the grounds are state of the art. The cities are great. And yeah, the beer culture is second to none.
It's a good point Rory makes about the public transport. And this, again, is sort of proof positive that German culture doesn't just happen football-wise by accident. The majority of the clubs are fan-run in the sense that there's this 50-plus-1 rule, which means that, you know, an oligarch can't come in and treat the club like his personal toy. So you have safeguards in place, and the fans are part of that as decision makers. You know, it's often said in Germany, we are fans, we are decision makers, we are not customers. You know, we are not, as in England, we are not customers at all here. We are part of the decision-making process. And that's why you have things like joined-up public transport. It helps as well in Germany that you don't have 10 private companies running train services and bus services. It's all run by the local government or the regional government. So that allows them to do things like, as Rory said, you get your match ticket, and part of that is within the local area. 5 hours before the game, 5 hours after the game, you get transport to and from, which just makes sense. You know, it just, the whole thing just makes sense. And okay, you know, UEFA are setting the prices here, so it won't be the bargain prices that you have for a Bundesliga game. There'll be some things that are different. It's a shame that the standing areas won't be part of it, because that's an intrinsic part of German culture. Rory was in Frankfurt. He saw that for himself, just what that is in Frankfurt in terms of the standing. So it'll be sitting. But still, it'll be something special. And I don't know if you guys agree. I just have this picture in my mind. I was talking to some friends in Köln recently, and just saying, I'm just visualizing, you know, 75,000 Scots here on match day, and they all said, yeah, what a beautiful thing. Let's all buy kilts and join in with them. You know, wouldn't that be great?
I'm gonna do what Rory does and find some hills and try and visualize the most, like, Scotland winning the Euros.
I'm
football Jedi way.
I'm so buzzing with this now. The only thing that's missing is the iconic Rory commentary from that John McGinn 96th minute winner against Spain. That means that's, I can it. Actually book my flights and get officially excited. Once I've got that, it's perfect.
Something will hopefully come to me. You don't. We'll see. I'll be in Seville for that game with Fireplay. So that's gonna be really exciting. Really looking forward to that.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Okay, let's do our Premiership, Championship, League One and League Two recap. I'll take the Premiership because I want the glory. So we'll do it that way. I am the king of this castle. Rangers, they beat St Mirren. They ended their unbeaten league run. 3-0 win. James Tavernier with a brace. His second actually was an absolute peach. So a positive end to a difficult week for Rangers after they sacked Michael Beale. Questions, though, still on the board as they look to appoint a new manager. Steve Davis is still in interim charge, but there's names being bandied around. Felipe Clement, Pascal Jensen, Kevin Muscat are all in the running, so it's probably going to be Derek McInnes or David Martindale in the Ibrox hot seat. Aberdeen couldn't add to their win against Rangers last week. They drew to St Johnstone, 0-0 that ended. They did actually score, but the goal was ruled out by VAR. Celtic put their best performance of the season, probably, against Kilmarnock. Hearts and Hibs. Did you watch that at the weekend? No, I don't think anyone did. A pretty class game, to be fair. 2-2 draw. A stunning goal from Alan Forrest, to be honest. Jambos did have a 2-goal lead before Ellie Ewan levelled matters with 2 goals in as many minutes.
It's just so good that the game wasn't televised and everybody missed it. You know, why on earth would you want to put that on TV?
Because I just yearn for the highlights online, you know. That's what I really look forward to on a Tuesday night or whatever. Anyway, Livingston got their first win since the opening day, and their first against Motherwell in 10 matches. Good for them. It was quite a weird one. Laura, did you notice that Sean Kelly scored against his brother? Liam.
Yep. Oh, so dear. The brothers stepped up against each other for the penalty, and it was, is his big brother? I think Sean's the big brother.
Big brother is his son's the oldest,
Yeah, I mean, it must have recreated a lot of memories from the back garden of where they grew up playing against each other. They've got a younger brother as well. He's playing for St Mirren just now. I can't remember his first name. But yeah, he's quite young, but he's broke into the first team. and he's another goalie. So yeah, Sean must have had a lot of practice over the years from taking penalties. So yeah, it was a shame. I was hoping Liam Kelly was going to come out on top of that one. They almost got a second one as well. And I thought, right, this is your time. Get one each. And you can go home happy. But no, that one didn't end up getting given in the end.
The other game didn't happen. Dundee, Ross County postponed because you can't play football on swimming pools. So that didn't happen. Finn, can you tell me now what happened in the championship?
Oh, absolutely. Best league in the country. the best place to start is probably the Ayr Derby. That's not a thing. Ayr United were playing Airdrie. It finished 2-1 to Ayr. Anton Dides, it was, who scored the match winner, and that's him now scored in each of his last three games. A real purple patch for him. Laura's lost it for some reason.
She got the Ayr joke like 2 minutes later. It's the champagne
well.
She had in British Airways.
It is. It's catching up with her now. The hospitality life.
We need to make that a thing.
Oh, Ayr Derby. Okay. Yeah, it's got to be laboured as well. So you know the distinction between the Ayr Derby and the Ayr Derby. Dundee United are still top of the table despite being held by second place Raith Rovers. That was 1-1 in that game. Not a lot of goals in the other games. 0-0 between Queen's Park and Morton, although I think the Spiders will be happy with that because it ends a run of 5 straight defeats in the league, during which they've conceded 17 goals. So a point in a clean sheet, happy days for them. Also, here's another one for you, Laura. Goalless in the Jaggy Derby between Cali Thistle and Partick.
Laura's gone. Class. That's it. It's ended
has to be a name. The Jaggy Derby.
See, why are Cinch walking away from this? What? Look at what they're going to miss out on.
I actually think this is a good result for Cali because so they're still undefeated under Big Dunk, and Thistle have really been taking some big scalps recently. They've had some big wins and big scorelines, so that's 4 points from a possible 6 in the first 2 games under Big Dunk. So yeah, that's how the championship's looking.
Has to be down to Big Dunk's dream rings.
Oh dear, let's move on. Championship is done. Absolutely dripping in icing. Let's move on to League One, Laura. Take us through it.
Not as exciting as the Ayr Derby and the Jaggy Derby, anyway. No, it was the top of the table clash between Falkirk and Hamilton Accies, which was significantly more disappointing than any of that put together. Both of them on this unbeaten run, neither of them blinked yet, both level on 23 points. And it's still honours even because the game ended goalless. So, Falkirk.
Cinched it, lads.
Yeah, really looking forward to that one, but that was pretty rubbish. Falkirk still on top. They're on goal difference. And Aki still have the best defence in the league so far. Queen of the South, they're on 5 straight defeats in a row. Andrew, you must be absolutely loving life right now. That wasn't great. Another 1-0 loss to Stirling. Stirling Albion win that one away from home. Queens play local rivals Anna next. That's an important game for the Dunhammers.
Yes, it is. Dunhammers?
What did I say?
You said Dunhammers.
Dunhammers.
It's the Dunhammers.
Sorry, I didn't implicate my southern accent.
I look forward to the Dunhammer Derby.
Spending too much time in Aberdeen this week. That's what it is. So, they're really good for their Dunhammers.
I didn't engage my brain to the south of Scotland there for my dialect. I mean, Trolls and Cove Rangers, they both get back to winning ways as well. But Kelty Hearts, they're the story of the week from League One, hammered Edinburgh City 4-1. First back-to-back wins of the season.
Finn, what about League Two?
Peterhead are still leading the way in League Two. That's 4 straight wins for them. They won 3-1 away at Forfar. Dumbarton are pretty hot on their heels.
Like you're saying they're classified there.
Peterhead. Oh no, you'd say it goes the other way, so it's like 4-1, Peterhead 3. That's the way you would do it. You always knew by the inflection which way it was
going. Oh, yeah. You've absolutely got a voice for the classifieds, Finn. That should be our SPFL roundup every week, just Finn reading the scores.
Yes.
Spain, 0. Scotland, 5. Yes, please. That would be great. Dumbarton are hot in the heels of Peterhead, though. They absolutely pumped Clyde 4-0 with both Tony and Ryan Wallace on the score sheet each for the second week in a row. There's only 2 points between Peterhead and Dumbarton. There was a big win for Spartans. A great game between them and Stranraer. They ended 4-3. Spartans were actually 3-1 up before Stranraer pulled it back to 3-3. But Blair Henderson scored the winning goal 5 minutes after Stranraer had levelled it, which pushes them up to fourth in the table. So the Spartans are going great guns in their first season in the league. Elgin v Stenny and Bonnyrigg versus East Fife all called off because they were also swimming pools. And that's where they end League Two and the SPFL.
I did see somewhere, I can't remember where it was, but someone, whatever club it was, club account said, there will be a pitch inspection tomorrow with a picture of the pitch, like literally submerged in water. Someone commented saying, who's the referee doing the pitch inspection? Fucking Aquaman. It's so good.
Oh, God. Ah.
This is it. This is Scottish football in a nutshell. Right that. Right there. Absolute class. So that's it for another week. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Finn. I extend my thanks to Rory and Derek as well for lending their dulcet tones. So, so good. Pack up your dream rings, lads. We're off to Germany. Right, go and listen to something else now. Go away.